they decided to dress up kids in walking ads for a casino. In the most economically disadvantaged neighborhoods with a casino, you could easily have a 19% rate of problem gamblers. That creation of this normalization in this environment is what we have to stop. It's all gonna be for a casino. It's all gonna be for gambling. It's all gonna be, you know, bet this, bet that.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Koichi. He's the co-founder of Coney Islanders Against the Coney Casino, and he's gonna be talking about what happens when a brick and mortar casino is built in your community and what happens with the advertising. Koichi, thanks for joining today.
Hey, how's it going, Rob?
It's going great. Thanks for taking the time. And for those that are listening that might not be from Coney Island, might not be from New York, or maybe not even from America, tell us why this conversation is one that we still need to have regardless.
This is a land use fight in our neighborhood. We do not want to have a casino here in Coney Island. And, you know, I'm co-founder of a community group that is fighting the developer, you know, in the public space on their proposal to build a casino.
And what happens when a brick and mortar casino is built in a community to the surrounding economy?
It can have a devastating impact on the surrounding economy. So first of all, there's research from the University of Buffalo that says that when you build a brick and mortar casino, you increase the rate of problem gambling by 90%. So it's almost double. The University of Buffalo has found that different neighborhoods without a brick and mortar casino can have a problem gambling rate of between 1 and 10%. 10 usually is correlated with how economically disadvantaged the neighborhood is. So the wealthier neighborhoods, they have closer to a 1% problem gambling rate, and the most economically disadvantaged neighborhoods have a gambling rate of around 10%, and that's without a casino. Once you bring a casino into a neighborhood, the more economically disadvantaged the neighborhood is, the higher, that 90% increase, the higher, your rate could increase. So in the most economically disadvantaged neighborhoods with a casino, you could easily have, a 19% rate of problem gamblers, which is devastating. What that means is, you could be very close to 1 in 5 people having a problem gambling disorder, which is mind-blowing to think about.
Why is it, in your opinion, do you think that the more economically disadvantaged areas have higher rates of problem gambling?
It's the type of addiction that we're talking about here. So it makes sense, because what gambling does is it's you're chasing a dream. If you don't have money, everybody wants to have financial independence, but the more desperate you are for financial independence, the more you want or need money, the more you're likely to chase it in ways that may be irresponsible. People who have money already, they're less likely. I mean, this is statistics. So there are rich people who gamble, but you're less likely to go out and chase that dream and get started gambling, because you if you're satisfied with what you have, why gamble? The whole point of gambling is for people who are not satisfied with what they have to go out and try to get more. That's what gambling, it's a lure of, you make a bet in order to think that you will be able to easily get more. So it makes sense that the more economically disadvantaged areas statistically will have a higher rate of problem gamblers, because they're more likely to get started.
Now, this casino that's being proposed is called the Coney. Would you say that the neighborhood that it's being built in, or supposedly being built in, is economically disadvantaged?
Absolutely. So for people who don't understand or who are not familiar with, different neighborhoods in New York City, there's a long history to Coney Island. It's known as the People's Playground of New York. There was a period of time when Coney Island at its heyday was a very wealthy neighborhood. There have always been lots of famous singers and celebrities, Brooklyn Dodger players when the Brooklyn Dodgers were here, lived in this neighborhood. And this neighborhood was at one time a very wealthy neighborhood. But over the 60s and 70s, there was a period of urban renewal. There was a lot of white flight. The neighborhood had the city built a bunch of housing projects. So when you hear about people who live in the projects, that's Coney Island. There's 10 different NYCHA houses in NYCHA buildings in Coney Island. And when you talk about a NYCHA house, it's not like a house. It's like 1,000 people live in a NYCHA development. There are these big giant public housing buildings that are run by a government agency. We have a lot of people who are on the lower end of the income, and there are a lot of working class people. I don't know the 2020 census numbers, if they've even been gathered yet, but for the 2010 census, our average income was $41,000 a year. And so that's very low. In New York City, we have a large elderly population, and we have a large minority population, a lot of Black and Hispanic people. We are also a center for Russian immigrants, people from the former Soviet Union who moved here and moved to Brighton Beach, our neighborhood next door, in the early 90s when the Soviet Union collapsed. Even though we're called Coney Island, we're not an island. We're actually, a neighborhood. We're the southernmost neighborhood in Brooklyn, and we have around us other neighborhoods. In New York City, you can go a couple blocks.
My girlfriend's family's from Queens, and so I know that on their block, it's very heavily populated with people that are Indian immigrants, whereas a few blocks down, people are from Guyana, and then a few blocks further than that, you're in Flushing, and it's people from China, and it's like very much diversified in New York, but they're not building this casino in the Upper East Side. They're trying to build it in an area where they have lower incomes. So it's very important that we pointed that out. Now, Koichi, what would happen if this casino was built? What would it look like in Coney Island? Would it change anything about the way that the area itself is functioning?
Yeah, so this casino would be a huge economic disruptor to our neighborhood. In the sense, the traffic problems it would generate would be tremendous, mostly because in the casino developers' own documents, they say they want to build parking spots for 1,500 people, both employees and visitors to their casino. But at peak time, they want to bring 2,300 cars. So, and it's like 2,350. So what does 850 extra cars to 900 extra cars in this neighborhood look like? Well, we're only three blocks wide. We have Surf Avenue, Mermaid Avenue, and Neptune Avenue, and then Coney Island stops. It's the creek. So you have the Atlantic Ocean south of Surf, and you have the Coney Island Creek north of Neptune Avenue. We're not designed to take huge amounts of vehicular traffic. Our geography just doesn't allow that to happen. So we have a bunch of intersections that, the developer identified 45 different high traffic intersections that would be impacted where, there would be a problem. And they identified like 7 or 8 intersections that are already high crash prone intersections. And my intersection, where my apartment is, Mermaid and West 15th Street, is one of those high crash probability intersections. So they want to build their casino one block away on West 15th and Surf. if you have 1,000 extra cars coming from there, you block off the streets. So their proposal is to block off is to take over the streets, to build over the streets, and to block off the streets to vehicular traffic where they are from surf south to the ocean. You know, what that will do is that it will spill vehicular traffic over into my street and many other streets, and it will, you know, cause, you know, higher probability of car crashes. On the 4th of July, everybody likes to come out to Coney Island because it's beautiful to see fireworks and the Coney Island skyline. But the problem with the 4th of July traffic is that it takes hours to get out of this neighborhood because we are not designed for the, you know, 1,000 extra cars. We're just not. And, you know, everything comes to a standstill. Our main fire station, our main fire precinct, and our main center for ambulances, our main emergency center, is on West 8th Street. Mm-hmm. And so we have a whole geography of the whole west side of Coney Island where emergency vehicles need to pass by where this proposed casino site is, in order to get to people, the 100,000 people on the west side of Coney Island and in a gated community called Seagate. If you have a casino, you create traffic that, you know, will slow down emergency vehicles from getting to people who need them. And we have a large, you know, elderly population. We had someone in 2023 who on the 4th of July got a heart attack in Seagate. And it was, you know, when we have this high traffic experience where everything gets gummed down and no ambulance was able to get to this individual, and he died. The casino is going to be operating 24/7.
So there's the structural problem of just having this giant building and all the traffic that'll come with it. What is the psychological issues that might come along with it? What is the effect of a casino existing on the youth population of the area?
Yeah, so that was my main concern when I first looked at this issue. This issue was brought to my attention because the casino developer decided that it was a good marketing idea to sponsor a summer basketball camp.
How old were the kids at the camp?
From 4 years old to teenagers.
Wow.
And so this casino developer, what they did was they sponsored the basketball camp, and all the kids who had to play in the basketball camp had to wear shirts and shorts that said the Coney on them. So it was the branding of the casino. 4 years before this thing is supposed to be built, as a marketing ploy to show that, you know, they have public support for their project, they decided to dress up kids into walking ads for a casino. I have such a huge problem with using children to advertise for products that are for people over 18.
Yeah.
Because in our society, we wouldn't, you know, if this was Pornhub, or if this was, you know, Bacardi, or if this was, you know, some other marijuana, you wouldn't be dressing kids up in a in a basketball camp wearing ads for companies selling that. So why is it? Why are we normalizing? Why are we making it okay to dress up kids to advertise for gambling? Because gambling, actually, statistically, gambling addiction leads to more suicides than a lot of these other adult addictive vices. So, you know, it's very concerning to me that you know, you're dressing kids up in the gambling ads, because that normalizes a behavior that is very, is very irresponsible and can be very irresponsible and dangerous. When you target people of the age demographic before the brain is fully formed, and you get them young and you teach them the message that gambling is okay, you are more likely to create gambling addicts of the future. And that's how a casino is going to make their money.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. And you had mentioned that you have a son. How old is he?
He's 7 now.
How old will he be when this casino is theoretically built?
11. So you can imagine my concern, right? Like you want an 11-year-old to grow up, you know, to start it. You know, I moved to this neighborhood because it's a great neighborhood for children, right? I live across the street from a Nathan's Hot Dog, the original Nathan's Hot Dogs, the provider of hot dogs for Major League Baseball. I moved here because there's an amazing, amazing amusement district. People from all over the world come. We're a place where a family can, you know, really enjoy, you know, raising their kids in a place in New York City. It's a fun neighborhood to be. To have a casino here, it ruins that. It ruins that character. You take away the, this is a great place to raise kids. Now you have this big, huge, million square foot complex that's an adult, you know, for an adult vice of gambling. Who wants to move to a neighborhood for a casino?
What does the current advertising look like around the area that you live? What kind of products and services are advertised on billboards around that area?
Oh, well, you know, our most famous billboard and our building with advertising for it is Nathan's Hot Dogs. So if you're familiar with the annual July 4th hot dog eating contest, that's outside. I can almost see it from my bedroom window on July 4th. It's just around the corner for me. And Nathan's Hot Dogs is the biggest advertisement.
What do you think it would look like in 2030 if that casino is built? What do the ads look like in your mind around that area?
Well, it's all going to be for a casino. It's all going to be for gambling. It's all going to be, you know, bet this, bet that. What you see in a lot of sports stadiums now where, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings and whatever, they're all over the stadiums now. We don't have gambling ads now. When you don't know what something really bad could look like, and you're not, because you don't have it, we don't have any gambling ads that we're looking at now. But every billboard, everywhere where you look up, you go into the train station and there's you know, ads in the trains. Everything is going to be for gamble this, gamble that, to transform that from, you know, ads for restaurants and food and fun amusements to ads for gambling. Going to be a pretty stark change.
It reminds me of what happened with Atlantic City. So for those that don't know, casinos came to Atlantic City in the 70s. And of course, I wasn't around when they came, but my grandparents and people of their generation speak very fondly of Atlantic City because it used to be that entertainment capital of the area. There's the convention center there, there's the boardwalk, there's everything that was entertainment at a boardwalk place. And then the casinos came in and now everything is about gambling. And my perception of Atlantic City is it's a very dirty place with casinos, whereas their perception is this entertainment hub of our region that now has casinos. Now it has changed. So the before and after is that stark contrast. And that's what I wanted to point towards. What do you think the impact's going to be for your son's perception of Coney Island if this change were to happen? Would that same situation play out where you remember it fondly? He remembers it as the place with the Coney?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to think about it. So, you know, I've been working very hard to make sure that the Coney doesn't happen. And, you know, I've been organizing over the past year because I don't want to imagine that. So New York State in 2014 passed an initiative to legalize casino gambling in New York State. It was pushed through by former Governor Andrew Cuomo as, you know, a revenue and jobs generator for the state. They have seven casino licenses. So four are for upstate, and they've opened four casinos upstate in upstate New York and three downstate. And so we're going through the process now for where are the three licenses going to go for casinos in the downstate area. There are 11 sites that have made bids. Only three sites will get them. And two of those sites already have some form of gambling there. So there isn't as much community opposition on two sites. We are putting up as much of a fight as possible to say, you know, you can't build it here. And sure. Theoretically, the State Gaming Commission can say they don't want to grant three licenses. They can grant two licenses. If the bids don't match a particular criteria, they don't have to, grant a license, but they can grant up to three licenses.
So essentially then, this should not go forward if there's not clear objective community support by the appointed six-person committee.
That's correct. But we're putting all this trust into a six-person committee. They have to get four votes. Right now, we have the state assembly member who's written a letter and who's stated publicly that he's opposed to the casino. Then we have the city council member who says he's listening to people. We have the state senator who said that, geez, hears from the community that 90% to 10% people are opposed to the casino. Whenever she goes to a senior center, she asks people to raise their hands if they support a casino or are opposed to a casino, and it's 90-10 against a casino. But the mayor believes in casinos as a form of economic development. And the governor believes in casinos as a form of economic development because her husband is the general counsel for a casino company. It's a different approach that you have to take with different elected officials because, you know, governor's from Buffalo. I mean, her focus is not Coney Island, right? That person gets this huge power. They get to appoint 1/6 of this panel that makes this decision. We're hoping that we can get the borough president, the state senator, the state assembly member, and the councilman's appointees to be no votes. That's what we need. We need to have three of those four in order to stop the proposal from going to the state gambling commission.
So before we got on the call, you had mentioned that one of your fears was the conversations that people would be having, especially like kids would be having at public schools as it relates to like the normalization of gambling. What is that fear for you as your son would be, I guess, going into late elementary school, early middle school by that time?
Right. So basically, late elementary school, early middle school is the prime age for being, you know, influenced by advertising. It's when the human brain is developing the most. And when you put someone in a socialization environment with other kids, you know, you learn the most, not just from your teachers, but you start learning from being socialized with other kids. I mean, it starts earlier than that, but, you know, late elementary school, middle school, that's when, you know, you start really making friends and really learning from your conversations at lunch and recess. Kids don't realize it starts to become cool, and it starts to be you really start to learn not just from your classroom, not just from your textbooks, not just from your teachers, but from the other kids around you. And, you know, you start talking and learning about other people's experiences. If you have a kid in that kind of environment, in a public school environment where he's with other kids, and then all of a sudden when you introduce the brick and mortar casino, other kids around him are going to grow up in a household with parents who go to the casino, who make gambling, you know, part of their lifestyle, and normalize gambling as part of, you know, their lifestyle. I don't want my kid socializing with other kids who come from households like that. That is how one person with a gambling problem can breed another person with a gambling problem. That creation of this normalization in this environment is what we have to stop. I am just so concerned about that. And people don't think about that. People don't realize that that is a problem. That even if you don't use the casino yourself, and even if you say you don't gamble, when you build a casino and you send your kids to public schools, you expose your kids to people who believe in normalizing gambling as a lifestyle. And that's not a lesson I want to teach my kid.
Yeah, there is a stat that says it's between 6 to 10 people, in addition to the problem gambler, are directly impacted as a result of that person's gambling. So it's definitely a ripple effect for sure. But before we close out today, I wanted to give you a moment to shout out your group and shout out the t-shirt that you're wearing. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I am the co-founder of Coney Islanders Against a Casino. And I have this t-shirt here that says No Casino in Coney Island. Our group is, you know, a community group here in Coney Island that's been fighting this casino. We have a petition online, and we've partnered with a local performing arts group. And it's a very famous Coney Island performing arts group called Coney Island USA. They do the sideshow, fire breathing, sword swallowing. They have all sorts of, you know, awesome classic Americana type boardwalk performances blend in with the historical nature of Coney Island. And their building, if this casino gets built, is in danger of being destroyed by the construction around it, because it's a building from 1917. They're very opposed to the casino. And so they built a website. And it's ConeyIsland.com/no casino, all one word. So www.ConeyIsland.com/no casino. And that leads you to a petition. And we've had more than 6,000 people sign our petition. The special thing about that petition is when you sign that petition, you can put a note of why you're opposed to the casino on your petition. When you sign the petition, it automatically generates emails with that note to the 6 elected officials who may be making the decision on the the community advisory CAC, the community advisory committee. Go to that website, sign that petition. Doesn't matter if you're not from Coney Island. If you are from New York State, you still have the same governor. So if you have any address that's in New York State, sign our petition and your message will go to the governor. And if you're in New York City, you still have the same mayor as us. So, you know, sign the petition. Every signature matters on our petition. Our power is only as great as our grassroots, you know, support. Throughout this process, every step of this process, we'll have our activists there. We're going to be involved. So when it goes before the Brooklyn Borough Board, we'll be there. We'll be talking to people on the Brooklyn, the borough president's staff. And when it goes before the city council, that's the last part of the local zoning. We'll be, you know, talking to people on the city council about, you know, why this is such a horrible proposal. So we're working with our elected leaders in every step of the way, and we're building as large a web of grassroots support as we possibly can. This is a $3 billion project, so I can't stress enough about how big of a proposal this is, how much money this developer has been throwing around the neighborhood to different nonprofit organizations, kind of like bribing people to get them to support this project. No one organically wants a casino in their neighborhood, but there are people who think that if a casino gets built, then their organization will get regular funding from the casino developer. So that's who, you know, we have to deal with. That's the pro casino people. is people who think there's something in it for them if the casino gets built. You know, I'm in it for the long haul. I'm in it to win it. You know, I don't get involved in these community issues to lose them. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we win, and I know that we're right. We're here to, you know, make our neighborhood a better place.
Well, Koichi, thank you so much for the time. I'm wishing you well in this process. And to anyone that was looking for that link, check the description of this video. And if you want to hear a story about what might happen to someone if this casino is built, then check out this story of problem gambling. And let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.